Okay, and please help give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Joe from the Deep Creek Serenity Home Group.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
My name is Harold Hunt. I go by Joe. My birth name is Harold Joseph Hunt Jr. I was born in 1986 here in Portsmouth, Virginia. I grew up as a young kid, fun, had a great family in a sense. My parents split up when I was younger. My father was also an alcoholic. He was the definition of an alcoholic to me. As I grow up, about the age of 10, I would say, I probably had my first alcoholic drink. It was on a New Year's, things like that. My parents and my grandma would allow me to drink, controllably, on New Year's, things like that. But the next year, I believe I was 11 years old, and that was the day that I became an alcoholic. It was New Year's, we were sneaking beers, me and my cousins, and my parents found out, and my stepdad ended up coming out and giving me a beer, and he was like, it's cool to drink, and just as long as you drink around us. And I was like, all right, that's cool. Well, I got really drunk, and my cousins, they weren't picking on me or nothing. And, I felt great. I was happy. I was laughing. I had that good feeling, like I had belonged there with my cousins. As I got older, I think I was 13, my stepfather was in the military, and we moved down to South Carolina. This is where I met my best friend, and we were best friends, man. Like, miss him to this day still, but it is what it is, man. Me and him, we did a lot of stuff together, man. We did everything for the first time together, man. Smoked weed for the first time together. We did everything, man. And we became very destructive at the time. We lived on base. We got in a lot of trouble. We would break into houses. We would break into cars, all kinds of stuff just to be a complete nuisance. And my stepfather, he got orders to move back to Virginia. And moved back to Virginia. This was 1999. I moved back here to Virginia. I ended up going to I went to Nansman River for my freshman and junior year, and I just partied the whole time. I was not so much of a drinker at the time because I was underage and I couldn't buy it, so I relied on other drugs. I became a very big pill head. If there was any kind of pill you had, didn't matter, I would take it. And I wouldn't just take one, I'd take four or five. There was an instance where I took 26 pills called Coricidin when I was younger, and I ended up completely losing my mind. And after that day, I never took medicine again because I didn't want to feel that way. So I then left. My parents bought a new house out in downtown Suffolk, and then I got switched from Nansman to Lakeland. And if y'all don't know, they are rival schools. And I was a very good people person, so I knew and was cool with everybody, so all the parties that we had, I was like the center of attention. I was always drinking, throwing up everywhere, making people laugh, and it a lot of times I don't even remember a lot of the nights. And I don't know what I was saying, what I was doing, or anything. You know, I was just on this drunken rampage, this snowball, and I just kept going and going and going because it was the only thing that was the solution for me. It helped me fit in. It made me funnier. It made me smarter. You know, it essentially just made me fit in with everybody. Everybody drank when I was in high school, so I was obligated to do it as well. But I could never stop drinking. Once I had a drink, I would drink until I would either pass out or I would just be blacked out drunk, throwing up, or yelling at people, start fights, you know. So as I graduated high school, I then found my ex-wife. We ended up getting married. I moved out at 17. My parents got stationed up in New York, and I had a job at the time. I had graduated high school, so I was a man at the time. You know, I told my parents, I'm not moving out. I got a wife now, and she was soon to be pregnant, you know. So I told my parents, you know, y'all move up there, and I'm going to stay here. I ended up staying here for a little bit. We had our own little duplex in downtown Suffolk off Constant Street. And I got a job working at Kelly's Tavern. And I would drive to Kelly's Tavern. I ended up getting a DUI, and I eventually had to start walking there. So as I go on, sorry, kind of hopping around, and I'm trying not to take too much time, but after I graduated, we had all that. Her parents was looking at houses in Tennessee because it was really cheap there at the time, and the schools were really good for her younger sister at the time. So we ended up moving to Tennessee, and at that time, oh, I'm sorry, I had my daughter before we moved to Tennessee here at OBC Hospital. When she was born, the first thing I did was I literally went to the 7-Eleven across the street and I got a beer. I was drinking the time that my daughter was born, my first daughter, you know. So after we had our daughter and everything, we ended up moving to Tennessee. I ended up getting a job at Olive Garden where my wife worked at the time, and I was a line cook. The restaurant business is it's an alcoholic's dream, I guess, if you will. You know, you close the shop and then the open bar right there, and it's free, you know. So I ended up spiraling down even more there, because when we moved there, I turned 21. And once I turned 21, I didn't need to smoke weed anymore. I could go to the bar and drink. I can't go to the bar and smoke a joint, you know. So I ended up quitting marijuana, and I started drinking. And that's when things really started to escalate. At that time, I was 21. I had just completely lost my mind. And every day, I would drink. It got to the point where me and the wife had gotten into it, and there was one evening I was changing the oil under the car, and I rolled out and asked her to get me a cup of water, and she said, we need to talk. I said, okay, about what? She said, I think we need to get a divorce because I can't deal with the drinking anymore. And I was like, huh? Like, what are you talking about? We got a house, we got a family, everything is all right, you know, like, all the bills are paid. I don't understand what the issue is. So after that was discussed, I told her I would sleep on the couch when taxes came in. If we weren't better, if things weren't better, I would end up getting my own place. And then I went to work the next day, or the day after, and there was a young man that was hired to be a busser. He had come in, and he walked up to me, didn't even know the guy, and he said, "Hey, I heard you're looking for a roommate." And I was like, "Huh?" So we ended up talking and stuff, and I went over his house. I was like, "You know what? Yeah, let's see if he's a cool guy. I might move in with him." I go over his house, and we're drinking a little bit, and he's a pretty cool guy, so I ended up moving in with him. I went to the house to pick up my things from where I used to live, and my wife was furious. She didn't understand where I was going or why, and I said, "You made the decision for me, so I'm out. I'm gone." And I left my family right then and there. It was one of the worst mistakes I've ever done, but I'm glad it happened to me. You know, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now. After that happened, the compulsion to drink was even more. I was sad, depressed. Nothing was going my way. I ended up eventually losing my job at Olive Garden, and I was homeless for a couple months. I was literally walking to the Dollar Tree, picking up change to buy eggs, whatever I could do to eat. This went on for roughly 3 years, 3 to 4 years. I was about 24 when all this had went about. And then in 2021, it was like the day that the Mayan calendar was supposed to end and the world was supposed to end and all this stuff. They were coming here to visit family, and I had nowhere to go. And my mom ended up letting me come back here to move in with her to get back on my feet. So I ended up riding in this car, squished between the car seats and my two kids. I skipped over my whole other daughter being born in New York. New York was a whole another scenario too. After we had lived in Tennessee, I'm sorry, I'm jumping here. We lived in Tennessee. My parents were upset that her parents were charging us a lot of money to live in the house. So we ended up moving up to New York for about a year and a half, 2 years. And this is when my second daughter was born. And I was literally downstairs in the car drinking a beer when she was coming out of my wife at the time. And it just blows me away when I think about it again. But this is when we moved back. We got our own place and everything. And then she ended up having to talk with the guy and this and that. So then after all that happened, I ended up moving back here to Tennessee. I didn't have a job for about 2-3 months. And my mom, which I was living with, she was feeding me beer, you know, while I was not having a job. So I was just sitting at my mom's house watching my little niece, which was 2 at the time, and I was just getting drunk all day playing video games, you know, waiting on a phone call from a job to hire me. And it never worked out for 3 months until I actually went up there. I ended up getting a job back at Olive Garden, but here in Virginia instead of Tennessee. I got back into the same crowd of people. We would go out and drink every single night after work at Skeleton Tea or Big Woody's, or we'd go out to Virginia Beach sometimes. But the whole thing always turned out to be the same in the end. I would always drink way more than I was intended to. Way, way more than I would intend to. This went on for a couple more years. Then about the age, I think I was 26 when I met my fiance wife at Olive Garden as well. And she used to be a very big drinker as well, so it was like a match made in heaven, you know. But we had somebody pass away, and she ended up going off the deep end, and I thought she was an alcoholic, you know. I didn't know what an alcoholic was at the time. An alcoholic was my father, who drank a bottle of Jim Beam every day, and a case of beer. You know, that's an alcoholic and doesn't pay their bills, yells and cusses at their wife, this and that. You know, that's an alcoholic in my eyes. So we met and we've been together for 13 years now. We have two kids, and during that period of time, this is when alcohol, I no longer consumed alcohol. It took over my life. I mean, I was working third shift, so I worked third shift for 7 years at the company that I worked for, and the only way I could cope and be in reality was to drink. It helped me stay up. I never really ate anything ever at all because I got all my carbs from beer, you know. Let me get a sip of drink real quick. I'm sorry. Me and my fiance now, she ended up not drinking, putting a drink down because she is not an alcoholic and she can do that. I continue to drink more and more and more and more. And it'll get to a point where I would drink nothing but Bud Ice, and I would drink an 18-pack every day. And this is every day. I did not skip beer day ever, you know. I was not a big person on liquor because it would make me black out. Beer would make me gradually get drunker this way, so I thought I could control it better. If I drank alcohol, it was like I'm fine, and then I'm screwed. If I took one more shot, I was done for. So I really wasn't a big drinker on liquor, but that's not what made me an alcoholic either. So as we go on, about 30, that was the age I wanted to quit drinking. I had a mental note, like, for about 15 years, once I become 30, I'll stop drinking. That never happened. Through all the DUIs, heartless nights, many of fights me and the wife have gotten into, nothing was ever enough to make me stop drinking. There was a night, I was sitting in a chair and I was drinking Twisted Teas. And I was doing something on my computer, and next thing I know, I was waking up out of a trash can and my son was staring at me in the eyes crying, and I could not recall anything that had happened. I'm guessing I had thrown up and just kept throwing up, and I ended up blacking out, passing out in the trash can. Right there and then, that should have been an eye-opener to stop drinking, but I did not stop drinking. I thought I just was drunk and just passed out, threw up, you know. Just another day of in Joe's life throwing up and passing out. But after that, I essentially tried to stop drinking a couple times. I tried to switch to Odules for a while, and that seemed to help for a little bit, but it did not help me with my problems in life. Once again, alcohol was my solution at the time. If I was upset or got a raise or fired, anything, alcohol solved my problem right then and there. It made me not think about it. It made me completely drift away from all my problems, and I was just happy. Even if things were terrible, I was still happy that I had alcohol in my system. So around the age of 34, I was probably at my deepest end. I no longer had any more friends. I'd shut them all out of my life. I no longer wanted anything to do with God. Absolutely nothing. Before I came in this program, I believed I was cursed. I would get drunk many a night screaming at the sky, "Why would you make me like this?" You saw what it did to my dad? saw what it did to my aunts and uncles on that side of the family. They all passed away from it. So why would he make me this way? And I never understood that. And so I came into AA with a hatred towards God and the way I used to think and stuff. And I was upset at everybody not giving me what I wanted. I'm supposed to be this handsome, smart, young, intelligent man who knows everything, you know? And it just didn't seem to pan out the way any time I wanted it to go. So this went on for about another year until I was around 35. And then there was a concert me and my mom wanted to go to. It was a dream concert that we had. And it was Chevelle, 3 Days Grace, and Brinkin Pitcherman. And I always drank a 12-pack before I would go into a concert and take a couple of shots of Fireball or Captain Morgan. So we get to the concert, and we're in, and I go down to get some beers after Chevelle had played, and I was walking back up, and I tried to give knuckles to one of the security guards, and he was like, no. And I was like, dude, why not? And he's like, and I ended up losing my mind right then and there, like, bro, I'm trying to give you knuckles, and you're not. Next thing I know, there was like 15 cops around me, and they took me to the drunk tank. I don't remember anything in the drunk tank until I remember my mom crying, and she was saying, please let him out. He's normally not like this. You know, he's got a wife and kids and stuff. And they ended up letting me out, and they said that we both had to leave in order for them to let me out. So the whole drive from Virginia Beach to here, I'm still drunk, and I'm laughing, having a good time, telling my mom, you need to slow down, dude. You're speeding. You're going to get pulled over, and you've been drinking. You're going to get a DUI. And she's yelling at me the whole time. Don't tell me what to do. I'm your mom, and you just made me miss my concert and all this. And the next morning, when I woke up and I came to, she stayed the night there because she didn't want to drive home drunk. She said, we need to have a talk. I think you need to go somewhere to get help for your drinking. You can't drink like normal people, Joe. That was her words quoted. You can't drink like normal people, Joe. And I told her, I gave her a hug, and I told her I'm sorry. I'm going to try to fix this thing. That didn't work. I was a dry drunk for a little while. Miserable more than ever. I went back to drinking Odules again. And then I realized it smelled just like beer, so why don't I just drink beer? You know, I'm wasting money for no reason. So I ended up slowly drinking again, and then it just progressed more and more and more and more. You know, I went from drinking one deuce a day, and then the next day I was drinking two, drank two the next day after that, and then I was drinking four. And then it just progressed to where I was back up to 18 pack a day. This went on for until I was 36, and I came in here on my sobriety date, which was 9/23/2023, August 23rd. That day changed my life. I went in to my meeting with my mom was there with me, and they handed me a big book, or I'm sorry, not a big book. It is a very, very good friend that I know. He handed me this little pocketbook. He helped me set up my AA app and all that stuff. They passed around the paper, gave me all the numbers. And when I came in, you know, they did the whole how it works and everything. And I didn't know anything at the time. So when it got all quiet, I raised my hand and I was like, I stood up too. Like, it was so weird. I remember it like to this day. And I said, how do you fight the urge to not drink a cold beer after you cut the grass on a hot summer day? And little did I know, my grand sponsor raised his hand, looked at me, and he said, when you find the answer to that, you let us all know. And everybody started laughing, you know? So I was like, sweet, I'm in there, you know? Everybody likes me. I did want to stop drinking. I did want to stop drinking that day. I didn't drink for a couple more days. And then I ended up going to the scout cabin again. And I heard my sponsor speak. And I was like, ooh, that's the guy I need to be my sponsor. So after the meeting, I spoke to him. And he spoke with me. And he was asked me, are you willing to go through any length of sobriety to achieve sobriety? And I told him, yes. You know, I don't want to drink no more, man. He said, I want you to read the doctor's opinion and give me a call in the morning. And I said, all right. And then he gave me a hug, shook my hand, and told me he loved me. And then I went into my truck. And I was just like, what was that? What kind of grown man tells another grown man he don't even know he loves him? And why is he asking me if I'm willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? It blew me away. Like, it was weird. But I thought it was some kind of weird thing going on there, if you know what I'm saying. I thought he was attracted to me. But I ended up reading the doctor's opinion and calling him every day. This went on for about 2 months. During this time, I was reading the doctor's opinion and calling him, but I was drinking once in a while, just not around him. And then I got so comfortable to a point where he said, all right, you can come over, we can start reading the big book, you know? So I went over to his house and we started reading the big book. And then one time I came over and I was drinking. I had just drank a Twisted Tea and I was chewing gums, chain smoking cigarettes before I got there. And I'm in the house sweating. And I'm like, oh my goodness, dude. I wonder if he can smell it, you know? And I was like, no, he don't smell it. He would have told me to leave or something. He would have yelled at me. A couple days, a week later, he noticed that I was not applying myself to this program, so he had to let me go. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I ended up going out and getting drunk again. There was this point where I thought I didn't need AA. And I went dry drunk again. I was sober, dry drunk for a couple months. And then my best friend ended up passing away. I hadn't seen or spoke to him in a while because he was doing hard drugs. He was on heroin and cocaine and all this stuff. And I told him, I have my family. I can't hang around you no more, man. I can't be around that crap. So, the last thing I ever sold to him was I was going to beat his ass if I ever caught him doing that. And it never came to that. You know, I never got a chance to. I'd really like to, but I never got a chance to. He ended up passing away, and what's going to bring him back? Drinking alcohol. So I ended up drinking alcohol. And I got completely drunk, and I woke up the next day, and I was just crying. Like, why did I drink? I hadn't drank in a couple months or something like that. So this went on for a little bit longer. And then I went out kayaking with one of my buddies. And this was out in Virginia Beach. And I didn't want to drink. And I stopped drinking again for a little bit. And he was like, hey, man, you want a beer? And I was like, no, I don't want to drink, man. And this is what makes me an alcoholic. He offered me a beer, and I told him no. After about 20 minutes, he asked again, you sure you don't want a beer? And I was like, no. And then after about 30 more minutes, that little man was talking to me, saying, you know what? Nobody's going to know you're out here in the woods. It's just you and your boy. What's one beer going to hurt? Well, I ended up having like two or three. And this was at like 11, 12 o'clock in the afternoon. My wife was having complications with her heart at the time. And I ended up driving out there because she needed help with the kids at my mom's house at the time. I walked into the house, and as soon as I walked in the room, my wife said, you smell like alcohol. And I was like, yeah, I ended up drinking. I had like two or three beers, and that was it. I'm not drunk or anything. And my sister came in, and she started yelling and this and that. And then my mom and my sister were fighting, and they had their hands around their throat and stuff. And I looked behind them, and all my nieces and nephews and all my kids were sitting there crying. And that was my rock bottom. It killed me, man. Just to see my kids and my nieces and nephews crying over something like that. And it all hit because it was all because of me. Because I was selfish. I had three beers and caused all this chaos, you know? That was my rock bottom right there. So the next day was a Tuesday, and Tuesday was the first meeting I went to, which was Promises at the Scout Cabin. I ended up going to the Scout Cabin that Tuesday. Lo and behold, my sponsor was there again. I went up to him after the meeting, and I told him, I'd like to try this again, you know. I believe I hit my rock bottom, and I'm willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety. From then on, my life changed dramatically. I started to look at things differently. I know I couldn't drink from then on. Otherwise, my life was going to be in shambles. My kids would eventually grow up to hate me, just as the way I used to hate my father for drinking. But this is where we get into the good stuff. This is where I really, really applied myself to this book. This is my world right here. I carry it with me everywhere I go. If I ever have a problem, this book or anything in here will tell me what I can do to fix my problem. My problem is me. There is no solution for alcohol to me. You know, like, alcohol just destroyed me, it blinded me, and made me a person that I wanted to be, you know. God made me, you know. I didn't make myself. So at that point when I came in, I had to go through the steps. You know, my sponsor, he accepted me again. And right then and there, we started from square one again. He said, I want you to go home, read the doctor's opinion for a week, call me every morning. I said, all right. I did that every morning. I woke up, said my serenity prayer, read doctor's opinion, and then I would call him before I go into work. This went on for, I think, a couple weeks to a month. And then we started doing book study. I'd go over his house every week, and we'd read parts out of the book, you know. And then from there on, I had to understand that this is how I'm going to live my life for the rest of my life. And I'm all right with that now, 100%. You know, I look at this as like a college class for my life. And I'm never going to graduate, ever. I'm just going to be going to school to learn how to deal with myself for the rest of my life. So I started to do started the work to steps. Number one, I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm sorry, what time is it?
Yeah, it's
40. 7:40. All right. Step one, I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. I knew I was an alcoholic now. After reading doctor's opinion a couple times. After reading it, it kind of started to make sense. I'm an alcoholic because I can't have more than one drink. What makes me an alcoholic, if me and my wife go out to have our anniversary, she will have one beer and I'll have one beer. But on the way home, she's not going to be thinking about a beer. Me on the way home, I'm constantly raging. How can I get a beer? Is there beer at home? Do we have liquor or anything? Maybe some wine? I don't know. I can tell her I need cigarettes and I can run up to the store and get me some beer. That's what I could do. So that's what makes me an alcoholic. My brain is constantly thinking of how I can get the next drink. I have an allergic reaction every time I put alcohol in my body. It makes me want more. Even if I don't want a drink, if I have a sip, I'm gonna want more automatically, you know? So I was all right with labeling myself as an alcoholic, but the life unmanageable part, I didn't understand that. You know, I had my wife, I had kids, I had a house, all this stuff. My life's not unmanageable. My life is completely unmanageable. I can't control anything in my life. I might think I can, but I can't control if I get pulled over by a cop. He's going to pull me over whether I like it or not. That's unmanageable in my life. My pop my tire in my car, that's unmanageable. That's going to give me a reason to drink right there. That's my solution. My life is unmanageable right there. So as I understood that, I became willing to admit that my life is unmanageable now that I understand what that means. Two, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. This was a big one because, as I already told you, I had a hatred towards God. You know, why would he make me this way? And in the doctor's opinion, it states that we need to have a psyche change. And when I read that, I told my wife, this is what I need to do. As long as I have the psyche change, I'll be cured. I will be cured. So I kept going on and on and on, trying to figure out how to make my psyche change. And it never worked. Never worked. Couldn't do it. So I had to look at it as one of the hardest things I've ever done, and that was to try to find love. And when I looked at it that way, you can't find love. It just happens, you know? It just happened. I didn't make my psyche change, it just happened, you know? So at that point, I was starting to build my trust back into God, my belief into God. I can't even remember three right now. I'm thinking about it. I'm sorry. I should know this. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I think that's what it is. Don't yes. quote me on it. Okay. So at this point, I did believe there was a God. And there, I could have a relationship with him. You know, I've tried everything. What is the last thing that I could do wrong other than accept God? So I allowed God back into my heart. And I prayed many of times the serenity prayer, and I noticed that praying would essentially keep me away from alcohol. That serenity prayer has saved me so many times. When I first came in here, I can't tell you how many times I've said the Serenity Prayer, but it helped me out a lot. It got me through, you know, the person cut me off or whatever, you know, whatever was happening at the time. I would just say the Serenity Prayer, and my obsession to drink would essentially go away. At this time, I was growing closer and closer to God. And then the next step is step four, inventory, the good one. This is a list that we have to write of all the good and bad things that ever made us want to drink. People, places, things, institutions, anything of that nature. And I had a whole list of them, but it took me a while to write my list. I still was continuously calling my sponsor every day. I still call him every day to this day. So he would ask me, you know, how's that four step coming? And I'm like, yeah, I'm working on it. I'm getting it done. I'm just writing, like, I have like three things on my inventory list. And then it was about a month had gone by, and he said, how's that inventory list coming? And I was like, I'm working on it still. You know, I'm almost done. He's like, all right. And then, like that Saturday, I went and I sat down on my computer desk, and for about 2-3 hours, I literally did my inventory list and wrote down all the people, places, things that would ever cause me to want to drink, you know, from going to the beach to one of my friends passing away when I was in high school to, you know, just the government, you know, stuff like that. Just a couple things that were on my inventory list. But, so I go over to call him next day, and he asked me, you know, how's everything going, this and that, and, you know, how's the inventory list? I said, I'm done. And he said, I'm going to ask you two things. Do you have yourself on that list? And I was like, yeah. He was like, do you have God on that list? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, all right, well, we're going to go on to your fifth step now. So that Thursday night, I went over to his house. We ended up doing the fifth step, which is, I'm sorry, I didn't even say fourth step. Take a personal inventory of ourselves, and I can't think right now. I'm so sorry, man. Oh man, do we have the steps?
No.
Drawn by Jeff.
Five. Yes, I'm scatterbrained. So five.
Something about
admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. You can choose to take this step with your priest, minister, you know, basically anybody. And I chose to do it with my sponsor. From my understanding of this, I'm essentially talking to God through my sponsor or my priest or anybody, and I'm admitting all of the natures of my wrongs that I have gone through. And it is so crazy when you let go of all the stuff that happened. And it's just amazing. Like, you just let go and let God. I've heard in here so many sayings I've heard in here. And when I ended up finishing the fifth step, my sponsor told me, go home. I want you to sit quiet he didn't tell me. He's never told me to do anything but call him in the morning and stay in today. He suggested I go home, sit in quiet for an hour, and just meditate and listen and take in everything that just happened. And from that day, I no longer believed in God. I had faith. I had faith in him. Because I no longer, the obsession of drinking was lifted. And I didn't even notice it, but it happened a little bit before I did my fifth step. So this went on for a little while. And I was just on the pink cloud, man. Every day I was on the pink cloud, so happy. You know, I was riding home crying. I can't believe, man, it's been 5 months and I haven't drank. This is amazing, you know. I'm just thanking God the whole time. Like, I don't know why I never tried to do this before. And it was because I hadn't hit my rock bottom at that time. I needed to keep drinking until I hit that rock bottom. So, six. Humbly ask him to remove our short... No, that's seven.
Defects of character.
Humbly ask him to remove our defects of character. There are seven character defects that we have. There is envy, we have lust, we have greed, we have gluttony, sloth, pride, and anger. I didn't know what any of those were before I came in here. And all those are what I seen when I did my inventory list. Everything that I had listed on my inventory, it was one of them character defects that made me drink. Till the end? Sorry. Six. The character defects. This is where the humbleness comes in, because we admit that we were wrong in a certain area, you know, and then we go to step seven, and that's when we ask him to remove this part of my defect character that's standing in my useful, in my way of my usefulness to you. And then we get to eight, made direct amends. Whenever, made direct amends to people whenever, except whenever to do so would injure them or others. This was something I really did not want to do. I had to, you know, talk to a lot of people and, you know, admit that I was, I had to let my guard down and admit that I was a flaw in, I guess, the world system and causing all pain and agony to people, you know. And I've made a lot of amends to people, you know, my mom, ex-wife, children, things like that. And I would say a good 90% of them, that all they wanted was for me to just stay sober. They don't want me to drink. They didn't ask for a car or this or that. And some amends, I cannot tell my wife I'm sorry. That's not ever gonna happen again. I live my life as a living amends to her. There's not anything that I can do to change the past that made her think and put, you know, a vision on me the way that I am. But I try to live each day in God's eyes now. Step 10 is take personal inventory at night. This is just like our step 4, but we do it with ourselves and God at the end of the night. This way I don't wake up with an emotional hangover. If me and my wife get in an argument and I don't do my inventory that night, I'm going to be still mad the next day, because I didn't do an inventory and speak with God and ask him to remove my pride and my anger, which are most of the time. So I don't want to have that emotional hangover. Then we go on to 11, which is prayer, meditation. The way it was told to me that when I'm praying, I am talking to God. And when I'm meditating, I'm listening to Him. So I do a lot of prayers every morning, every night, throughout the day. And I don't pray for selfish things anymore. I used to pray to Santa Claus all the time. Give me this job. Let me get this, please. Let me hit the lottery. You know, those are praying to Santa Claus. That's all selfishness. I never knew how selfish I was until I came to this program. I couldn't go anywhere or do anything. I wouldn't go to reunions or nothing if I couldn't have an alcohol at all. Me and my wife went to Cracker Barrel one day, and I asked her why we didn't come here. And when I looked at the drink menu, there's no alcohol there. That's why we never went there. I mean, that when I see stuff like that nowadays, it just blows me away. 12, step 12 is we'll have a spiritual awakening. This happened about, I would say, maybe a year of not drinking, and I was essentially getting sober at that point. I had not drank, but I was getting to where I was almost sober. I would still get irritated and stuff at work, and you know, I'd still pray and stuff, but I really didn't consider myself being sober at the moment. What made me have my spiritual awakening, I watched the movie on Bill W., and it's a very good documentary if you've never seen it. And it just tells the whole life of, you know, how AA started, and where Bill W. came from, and all this. And it was like I was watching a movie of myself, man, you know. And my wife is Lewis, you know. And it just put a huge impact on my heart of what these people went through to get to where we are now, you know. Nobody could ever stop drinking before Bill W. I mean, we would try, but we could not have sobriety like we have today. And that blew me away, you know. I called my sponsor when I was smoking a cigarette on my break, and I was just crying. And he's like, "What's wrong, man?" And I was like, "Nothing. Like, I'm just in debt. I'm in debt to God. I haven't thought about a drink in months. This has never happened before. It's crazy." And he was like, "I think you're having your spiritual awakening." And from then on, I understood that God didn't make me an alcoholic. I made myself an alcoholic. God didn't pour alcohol in my system or put a gene in me to make me an alcoholic. I put alcohol in my body, and then I discovered that it is my solution. It'll make me happy. It'll make me not think about terrible things or people passing away or this or that. So the steps are a huge, huge part of this fellowship, man. I would have never been in this program if it wasn't for my sponsor sharing his experience, strength, and hope with me. I needed hope, is what I needed when I came in here. Nobody thought that I would ever quit drinking. I never thought I would quit drinking. But my sponsor saw that I wanted to quit drinking. You know, he gave me hope in that. And I believe that's what I needed. God didn't make me this way, I did. The way I look at it is, God has this big mosaic of the world and people, and I took His piece and I was like, no, I can make me a little stronger. I can make me a little happier. Just changing His masterpiece, you know? So it drove me further and further away from Him. But after I came into AA, I had faith, you know. I learned faith in this program. I no longer believe that I'm cursed. I believe I'm blessed. I wouldn't be able to stand here in front of y'all and tell you all this without drinking in the past. I get real nervous and shake and start stuttering a lot, you know. So I would that was another coping mechanism that I would use is drinking. But this program works wonders if you allow it. You know, I had to accept all my flaws. I didn't want to accept anything before I came in here. I would just write it off or put it on somebody else. You know, if I'm being a jerk or a terrible person, I need to act on that now, is what I've learned from this program. I don't need to make fun of somebody or put somebody down to make me feel better, you know? I'm sorry, I'm kind of rambling. Is it, what time is it?
You're good. You're good. I mean, you want to wrap it up?
All right, wrap it up? Okay. The things that got me sober when I came in here was reading the doctor's opinion, calling my sponsor every day. Sponsor is my most essential tool that I've been given by God. He helps me in a lot of stuff, a lot of ways that I couldn't have gotten through in times in the past. You know, with little sayings that he has said to me, it instilled it in my brain. It's imprinted, you know. Everything's in perfect order regardless of appearances. That means everything is the way it's supposed to be. Whether it's bad or good. God is not punishing me for nothing. He's giving me a lesson. He's trying to show me something. It's not here to it's not here to steer me in the wrong way. When I take over the wheel, I'm the one that's steering me in the wrong way, you know? I've also been instilled with, as long as I don't hurt anybody physically, mentally, emotionally, intentionally, or spiritually, I'm doing the best that I can. You know, I can't hurt people like that because God wouldn't want me to hurt somebody. Why am I supposed to hurt my brother or talk down to him or put him in a negative mood when that mood is going to carry on through the day? God wouldn't want me to do that. So I live my life now by my steps, you know. I didn't understand how you could do the steps every day. It is possible to do the steps every day if you allow them and you work this program. In my life now, I don't even try to work them. It just comes natural. I know as soon as something's wrong, I'm irritated. And I'm discontent. I need to do an inventory of what's going on with me at that time. And when I'm done with that, I need to call my sponsor to make sure my character defects are the right ones that I've written down. I went to a lot of meetings when I came into this place at the very beginning. As well, my sponsor suggested I do the 90 and 90. I had 7 kids, so I went to 88 out of 90. And 2 of them I missed just to have a family dinner. A lot of people, they say they can't do it. I would beg to differ on that. My wife was very upset with me for 90 days. She needed a lot of help with the children, but I had to go through that to get to this point. I was also suggested not to speak at all for the first 90 days as well. And what I learned from that is I cannot learn anything if I'm the one talking. My big book has saved my life. There's a lot of things that are highlighted in here, but I was told to read the stuff that I do not have highlighted. A couple times I've been told that or heard that. And
this book is to be studied. It is a textbook. It's not a story or a movie. You read it, watch it one time, and then you put it down. I read this thing. I should read it a lot more than I do, but every time I read it, there's different things that point out to me. And I think I'm done, I guess. I don't know what I'm talking about.